Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We have a very packed 3 hours of sports programming for you today. Big show. LeBron James isn't backing down from the pressure in L.A. Jerry Jones says the Cowboys are a new team after beating the Saints Thursday night. But we are going to start with issues in Pittsburgh. It's been a rough couple of weeks for the Steelers. They've lost their last two games and apparently their last two running backs, sort of. Elbel's out, we know that. And now James Conner's ankle injury is worse than we thought. He's already been ruled out for this Sunday's game against the Raiders. Ben Roethlisberger is running out of people to throw under the bus. CC, how concerning is James Conner's injury for the Steelers? How worried are you about this injury?
Well, when he got injured during the game, and There's different types of ankle sprains or lower leg injuries, some more problematic, especially for skilled guys than others. But I thought initially when he got injured, you could see when the training staff, and typically when a guy's leg gets caught under with the turf and the body weight of a defender trying to bring him down, typically the number one injury is a high ankle sprain. Now, most of the time they're not reported to be a high ankle sprain. And there's a difference between a high ankle sprain and a basketball sprain. Basketball sprain, you step on someone and your ankle rolls on the outside and it hurts on the outside. A high ankle sprain feels like you broke your lower leg.
Yep.
And when he was on the ground, you could see him grabbing his lower leg. Now,
if
there was no fracture.
If you were calling this game, C, you would have in real time said you think this is a high ankle sprain and laid out how this is a multi-week significant injury. For it sounds, you hear ankle sprain and you think, oh, okay, a twisted ankle. High ankle sprain is such a significant difference from the regular ones.
And definitely going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. And the significance of what I saw compared to what Pittsburgh did yesterday, because they ruled him out on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
That is not typical. So it lets you know the severity of the injury. So, yes, they're going to have a problem because when you have that type of productivity, it's no different how you lose them. Kansas City lost their running back a different way. Now, the thing about James Conner, he's going to be able to come back at some point. Melvin Gordon, we saw with the Chargers, they lost him for last week, potentially with the MCL, might be out 3 to 4 weeks. So this is what teams are going to have to do. They're going to have to figure out, how can I get the same productivity, and especially with the running game being late in the year? Those running yards are hard to replace because right now teams have a certain identity. And you need to be able to run the ball, take some pressure off the quarterback. So I believe this will affect Pittsburgh and affect their offense. Won't affect them this week as far as Oakland. But if he has a high ankle sprain, when he does come back, how healthy is he really for the Steelers trying to make a huge playoff run?
And I wouldn't expect him to be healthy the week after the Steelers game, which is the Patriot game,
right,
which, given the Steelers' loss, it has a little less importance as far as a bye goes. But if New England trips up in Miami this weekend, a place that I think Brady has a losing record in his career, in fact, I know he does, I think he's 7-10 in Miami as a starter, then all of a sudden that Pittsburgh game will have significant importance. And the week after that, the Steelers are in New Orleans. So you want to be fully functional, especially given the fact that Big Ben's has shown this year a propensity to turning the ball over. Mm-hmm. If you have a lead late in games, I don't know how much the Steelers right now fully trust that short and intermediate passing game to just be an extension of the running game, as it has been in years past, because Big Ben has been turning the ball over at such a higher rate. Now, James Conner had not been super productive this last month of football. Now, that coincides with the Steelers' worst month of the season. But this is a loss that it doesn't knock them out of any type of contention, but they really need to go to turn. Their season's turning in the wrong direction. They need to get it righted before the playoffs. And now they were already relying too heavily on the passing game. Now they're going to have to rely almost exclusively on the passing game. And with Big Ben, in my eyes, having far from his best season, that is concerning.
What does their depth chart look like there? Who steps up? Who takes the bulk of that load?
I don't believe they have one person. I believe it's going to be a combination of players. Typically, when you have an injury like that and you don't have the confidence, you take two or three players to try to, to be able to lift that burden from the running game. As a young player, you don't like to be thrust into that. And so I like the combination. I believe they're going to throw the ball more. I'm not like Nick. I believe they're going to throw the ball, throw it short. That's the way they're going to be able to supplement the running game. But they don't have one guy right now that I can say, you know, exactly. Watch out right. for this guy.
Jalen Samuels, their fifth rounder, who stepped in the second half last week. He had a good second half against the Chargers. But, I mean, that's basically the extent. He started the year third or fourth on the Steelers running back depth chart. So he's a guy that you can't say, oh, okay, we lost Le'Veon, now lost James Conner. Jalen Samuels going to come in and fill that role.
Speaking of Le'Veon, is there any regrets to how that situation was handled? I mean, it's always on the table that a guy that's filling in could get hurt, and now it has. Do you look back and say, well, maybe we could have tried to find a way to make that work?
So I've obviously been on this show the most pro Le'Veon Bell person, and I think Le'Veon Bell's going to get a lot of money. I think I totally understand why he handled the situation the way he did. I think he's an excellent player. I also totally understand why the Steelers handled the situation the way they did. I get why Pittsburgh was hesitant, if not outright refusing, to give Le'Veon an actual long-term deal. It's the position, it's the workload, and it's that player's individual history that Chris has talked about extensively, where he's one failed drug test away from a potential year-plus banishment.
It's also his personality, which we have seen in this holdout, which is sometimes spotty. Sometimes, is he actually telling you the whole truth? Like, I haven't seen a whole lot of seriousness to him. So when you look at, when people go through tough times and everything, it reveals a certain part of their character. So Pittsburgh had serious reservations about guaranteeing him money long term.
Whether they had James Conner or not, whether James Conner was fully healthy, got hurt, whether he was a star or not a star, they knew that they were going to be a lesser team this year without Le'Veon Bell. And they made that decision to run that risk because they thought it was a bigger risk to give him $15 million a year with multi-year guarantees at that position with that workload for that specific player. So I had no problem with how Le'Veon handled this.
Right.
I have no problem at all, and I'm not second-guessing how the Steelers handled it either.
You talked about the risk. Does that risk include no real depth after James Conner, though, once you knew L. Bell wasn't going to be there?
Well, the other running backs around the league, the running back rooms are the same. Like, you can only have so much key potential, like, in the room. Look how many wide receivers they got. They got a great offensive line. So the Pittsburgh Steelers, don't act as if they didn't make him a significant offer. All right, they made him the best offer. You know what? They franchised him the last 2 years, which, if I get franchised, how much money am I going to make? $28 million?
Well, this year it would have been 15. Yeah.
But last year, how much?
They made 12.
Yep. Oh, well, how much is that?
27.
Oh, okay. The Pittsburgh Steelers are going to pay you that for a 2 year. But that wasn't good enough for him. And as far as agreeing with his plan, I can't agree with his plan because he didn't know what his plan was. Him and his agent was going by the seat of their pants. Oh, after 4 weeks, what's going to happen? Oh, then they changed their mind. Oh, I'm getting ready to come back. Like, so I can't say I agree with his plan. Did it work for him?
We'll find out. I know you're skeptical that it's going to end up working for him. But as far as the Steelers, like, they knew this was a possibility. And, by the way, as highly as they were talking about James Conner before the year and going into the year, they didn't go hardline with Le'Veon Bell because they truly thought, we've got an all-pro running back waiting to take the fold in James Conner. They were pleasantly surprised.
For that, the middle chunk of the season.
When he was a star those weeks 5 through 8, right, when he was really outstanding, 5 through 9, whatever it was. And now they're back in a situation that I think they probably thought they were going to be in most of this year without Le'Veon Bell. Replacement-level production at the running back spot.
I think Pittsburgh, and based on the conversation Mike Tomlin had with James Conner, they drafted him. They did have plans for him in the future. So I'd have to say I don't agree with you saying they were surprised. No, the reason why they could franchise L. Bell and not offer him the long term, because they had enough confidence in James Conner. Like, they did not go into the season not having confidence. If you listen to Mike Tomlin, listen to his interviews, and go back to the time when he was drafted and he personally got that phone call from a kid who's playing in Pittsburgh with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, like, this is not a kid coming from Utah, coming from down south. He was actually playing. So there was a relationship from the time that phone call was made.
All right, well, the Steelers are in Oakland this weekend, and they will do so without James Conner. Coming up, talk some basketball. Are the Lakers too reliant on LeBron? LeBron isn't even sure. That's next on First Things First.
Ever wonder how to get the hottest new sneakers, the ones that barely hit shelves? The answer, StockX, a revolutionary new marketplace for buying and selling 100% authentic sneakers, streetwear, watches, and handbags. Millions are already using StockX to find everything after it sells out, like the hottest new streetwear from brands like Gucci, Supreme, and Bape. StockX allows users to buy and sell pre-owned, excellent condition luxury handbags and watches from brands like Louis Vuitton, Chanel, Rolex, Omega, and many more. StockX is the go-to place for anyone looking for new streetwear without the hassle of waiting in long lines for the new Jordans or the new Yeezys. StockX provides tons of historical price data for your buying and selling needs, allowing you to know the average price that an item sells at and how many times an item has been resold. And StockX uses the same principles as the stock market to make buying and selling as safe and easy as possible. Last but not least, StockX provides up-to-date news on the latest drop dates for the newest streetwear. So go to StockX.com/FTF. That is StockX.com/FTF. StockX. Now you know.
All right, moving on to LeBron James. Okay. His Lakers have won 10 of their last 13, but LeBron is doing a lot of that work on his own. And former Lakers greats Magic Johnson and Kobe Bryant have said the team might be overusing the king. LeBron was asked about this, and here's what he had to say.
I don't know what asking me to do too much is, to be honest. I just play my game. I understand the logic behind it. I understand, you know, what Magic and Kobe are saying, because we want to continue to grow the young guys. You know, we want to see how, you know, how much our young guys can grow and be the best, you know, they can be. I mean, Magic and Kobe know who I am. I know who I am. They know what they're going to get out of me. That is, you know what you're going to get out of me every game. Am I going to play well every game? Am I going to shoot the ball well every night? No, but you know who I am. And when it's time to, when it's really, really, really money time, you know who is going to be there. So, you know, we got guys that just want to continue to develop and guys that continue to, you know, get better and better just from experience. And they haven't had a lot of experience. So I think that's, people are trying to blow it out of proportion. Like, okay, why do you have LeBron if you don't want to use him? Unless guys are just, they don't understand the logic behind it. But it doesn't matter. Like you guys asked me the other day, like, do you feel better after playing 30 minutes compared to if you play 40 minutes? It's like, no. I work myself all year round to get in tip-top shape all year round. I don't stop. So I can do whatever. I mean, I played a game seven in the finals and I damn near played every minute of it. Last year I played every single game. Every single game. So, you know, you can kind of slice it how you want it, but I understand what Magic and Kobe saying, and we have to continue to develop these guys, because if we don't, then long term, what does that do for our franchise?
Got a lot there from LeBron James. Nice to hear. Mm-hmm. What do you think about what LeBron had to say, Nick?
It's a very, very difficult balancing act, which is the best thing for the Lakers, for the young guys to learn how to play with LeBron when he is playing the way he will play in money time in the playoffs, which is ball dominant, running the offense, or is the best way for the Lakers and those young players to develop is to learn how to play either in those moments in the postseason when LeBron's on the bench, when he needs to rest on offense, when he's on the court, and to have some of that money time go through them. At the beginning of the season, they were going with the latter, and they were struggling greatly. Since then, they've gone with the former. They've won 10 of 13. They've all of a sudden climbed to fifth in the West. And the only reason you wouldn't go with LeBron do it all, LeBron, is if you are worried he's going to wear down. And that has been a legitimate concern for every player I've ever seen, except for, it seems, this guy. And so I know that they've got him for 4 years, not a 1-1. And so they are thinking about not just this year, but next year and the year after. And they know this year's team, see, is not equipped to win a championship. So you would think, okay, well, let's get the young guys' experience. Right. You know what the most important experience for the young guys is? Playoff experience. You know how you're going to get to the playoffs? Is having LeBron do what he's been doing the last dozen games. So it's a balancing act that I think right now, this latter part of the season, they have handled the right way.
This is about a couple different things. Number one, LeBron's never been at a place that had the history of the Lakers. So he, even when he was with Pat Riley, and they had Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade was not a made man then, even though he had won the championship. And Pat Riley, he just doesn't speak about the team the way Magic and Kobe did. That's not his management style. So because of the great legacy with the Lakers and because it's Magic Johnson and LeBron respects him, and as you can see, because it's Kobe Bean Bryant, he respects him. If he had been somewhere else, LeBron might not have agreed with what they were saying because he contradicted what they were saying,
correct,
but he also agreed with them so that there wouldn't be any type of backlash. But what LeBron is saying is true. LeBron is most effective handling the ball, but they have to develop these other players. So the biggest problem is Ball and Ingram. How much are they going to develop with LeBron having the ball? Kuzma's fine. Like he is developing. He is the type of player that can play a long time with LeBron because he doesn't need the ball. He moves without the ball. He's also got the most dependable shot of all those players. So he's the best offensive player among them. But it's always a balancing act when you are a legend playing and you have legends within the organization with Magic Johnson running the organization. So I think LeBron is doing the right thing by not splintering the fan base and having people try to pick between him, Magic, and Kobe. I love the way he included them all in the conversation. But if these young players don't develop, because they still need two or three of these players to develop, even if they get another superstar.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, they need these players to be Klay Thompson. They need one of these players to be a Draymond. If you're going to have another superstar, you need players that play significant role like the Warriors. So these players not developing, that's going to be a problem, and it's not LeBron's fault.
Well, that last part is what I want to touch on. It is Brandon Ingram's job as the number two overall pick of the draft 2 years ago, and Lonzo Ball's job as the number two overall pick of the draft last year to develop. Through hook or crook, no matter, to find a way to develop.
You are responsible for your own growth.
Yes.
Not the organization. You as a professional athlete. Because you have enough money, resources, and time that even if you thought you were in a bad organization, you can go out and hire people on the side that would be able to, there's enough of those people in basketball.
And it's not like the Lakers brought in legendary, amazing Russell Westbrook. Or even latter stages Kobe Bryant, where, yes, great player, all-time greats, but are going to be selfish as opposed to selfless at times, that are going to make it kind of ice guys out. They brought in the most selfless superstar we have seen since Magic, a guy that will get you the ball, that is looking to pass before he's looking to shoot. It is Brandon Ingram's job to find a way to crack 26 points. It is Lonzo Ball's job to find a way to be more than 8-6-6. Now, I think LeBron will help them, but they can't stunt the growth of the team as a whole for those to see what those two young guys can do in crunch time minutes when they're fighting for seeding, when they're fighting for games in the West. Now, the other thing LeBron said there, which is something he has echoed throughout his career, which is, it is not about minutes for me, it is about games. He has said that the difference for him, how he feels after a game, whether he plays 22, 32, or 42 minutes, is negligible. That where he has, at times in the past, wanted time off is not a minutes restriction, but take a game off or a game or two off where he doesn't have to get himself ready to play that night. He didn't get to do that last year. He very minimally got to do it the year before. That's one thing I wonder. I wonder if this year, if the Lakers are going to be in position where they're able to say to LeBron, we're going to give you this back-to-back off. We're going to give you this game off. We want you to play 76 games. They are more focused, it seems, right now on him playing 80 to 82 games, but cutting the minutes down. What he says is, for his body, the difference between playing 34 and a half minutes a career low or 37 and a half minutes as did 2 years ago is negligible in how he actually feels.
This has been the narrative with the Laker team since the beginning of this season. When LeBron James was in Cleveland, I asked you almost on a daily basis, are you worried about LeBron? You said, let's not worry until it's time to worry. When we talk football and I ask you about Tom Brady and the Patriots, it's always, well, why worry about Tom Brady and the Patriots until it's time to worry? Can't you adopt the same philosophy here? Can't you say to Kobe and Magic, this guy's given you no reason to worry about minutes played or his expenditure or all of it. Why not just wait until there's an issue and ride what you've seen? You haven't seen one crack in the armor at all so far, and I wonder why we keep bringing this up.
Because regardless if you're Nick, regardless if you're Magic, regardless if you're Kobe, regardless of how well you think LeBron is, Father Time is coming for him. It's undefeated. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when it's going to happen. Now, he's fighting him off. He's trying. All right? He's been more successful than anyone else. But it's going to happen. He's not going to be able to play 82 games. Like, he's not going to be able to continue to play 35 minutes. So, ultimately, if they don't start thinking about it, then they're not utilizing this four-year window that LeBron has signed on with the Lakers. Like, I would be monitoring his minutes because they have zero chance to win a championship this year. So why would I have LeBron worn out before I dabble into free agency and try to put a championship team on the court for 19-20?
And last year, I think it was an ego thing where LeBron said I wanted to. Now, the Cavs, obviously, last year needed him in every game, and they were fighting to at one point to even make the playoffs. But I also think LeBron wanted that on his resume. Year 15, I played all 82 games.
It was all ego.
It was
because they were big bad.
They were, right.
There were times he should not have been out there on the court.
And so I don't think he's going to play all 82 this year. And I think it would be foolish if he did play all 82. The question that nobody knows, because we do know Father Time is coming. What nobody knows is it going to catch up to him earlier if he plays 34 versus 38 minutes? Or is it just going to be an age thing? Do you follow what I mean? Like, right. At age 37, that's when he's going to hit the wall, whether that he plays 35 minutes a game, or will it be age 38 if he plays 32 minutes a game? They don't know, and they're trying to balance what they don't know with what they need right now.
The biggest thing with great players as they're aging is not getting hurt. That's the thing that ended Kobe Bryant, because Kobe Bryant was on an amazing run. And then he went through like 3 years of just injury after injury after injury. So one thing to watch with LeBron, watch how long before he gets some type of injury. That, to me,
that'll
be one of the start signs to being like, okay, Father Time, he's closer than I thought.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, are the Cowboys really a different team after ripping off four straight wins? Hear from Jerry Jones.
Of course, they're a different team. Yeah.
Welcome back to First Things First.
I used to be nice with these hands.
I was in the produce
section yesterday dropping stuff.
Steak, Mark Schlereth joins the show. Mark, great to have you.
It's good to be here.
Don't look now.
Hey, man, you ever eat pot roast? You like pot?
Oh, I love pot roast.
Okay. That's great.
That's great, as long as we're not talking about pot roast. Don't look now, but the Dallas Cowboys team, many thought was going to be on the outside looking in a few weeks ago, now sits atop their division. The NFC East is theirs to win as Washington keeps losing quarterbacks and the Eagles stretch out their Super Bowl hangover to an entire season, apparently. Dallas has won their last four games, including a big win over the Saints on Thursday Night Football. Jerry Jones was asked if that win changes the way he looks at his team.
Yes, and the main reason is not that all of a sudden you're aware of these players' abilities. It is that the players themselves will be different once they have tasted and have just made themselves aware that this extraordinary level of play or expectations of play can be obtained. And that happens. That's real.
All right, Stink, you buying? You agree with Jerry Jones? This is a different Cowboys team since they beat the Saints on Thursday night?
Well, I think it's been a different team for a couple of weeks. I think there's a couple of different things that you look at. I think benching Connor Williams getting hurt, and Sua Filo coming in and playing.
You keyed on that immediately when it happened.
It changed the tenor of their offensive line.
That's their left. They had a rookie left guard in there.
The rookie left guard who really struggled. Now, their offensive line hasn't been what it was, but it changed the attitude. It changed the tenor of what they did offensively. And obviously, you have to recognize, if you're a football team, what we're good at, what we can do. But that changed just the dynamic of who they are and the way they ran the ball. And I think it was a gigantic move by them. And then you look at what they're doing on defense. You look at Van Der Esch. You look at Smith, the way those guys are playing right now. That front seven is nobody wants to face that front seven. They are nasty. And if they get you in a position where even if you're only down by seven, it feels like you got to throw it to get back in the game because they have played with such ferocity. So when they get you in that position, they can get to your quarterback and they can do it consistently. They don't have to blitz. They can blitz, but they don't have to. But that's really been the difference. They're playing with an aggressive style and an attitude that they didn't play with early in the season.
I said before the Saints game that if they won that game, I would start looking at them differently. And I knew they were on a good run leading up to it. But that was, to me, I know they were only 7-point underdogs and they were at home. But that was a game I didn't think they necessarily would get blown out. But I said I would be shocked if they found a way to win it.
Sure.
And not only did they find a way to win it, it wasn't because, oh, they got a punt return touchdown and they had a defensive score. No, they won it on their terms. Mm. We're going to hold the total points in this game under 24. I was saying you can't hold the Saints individually under 27. Mm. They had only been held under 30 twice all year. Like, to me, what the Cowboys did Thursday night, what their defense did, was the single most impressive defensive performance any team league-wide has had all year long to dominate the Saints offense like that. So I have to take them more seriously. I have to now look at them as a team that, okay, so they're going to have a home playoff game, probably be a favorite in that game, and then they will go on the road either to New Orleans or to the Rams. Prior to the Saints game, I would have said their absolute ceiling is being one home playoff win if they're lucky, and then dominated in the second round against a rested, excellent team. Mm. Now you have to look at them as a team that at least has a shot at pulling off that upset with the exact blueprint we saw Thursday night.
I mean, it's no different than we're looking at other teams. It just happens that we're talking about Dallas. Any team that's able to generate momentum, create turnovers, win big games, come up big in big spots, do things that you haven't seen them. So you have to take all those teams serious. If the team starts to be different than they were in November, in October, of course, those are teams. Dallas just happens to be one of the teams. You talked about it, that aggressive style that they have started to mount the last 4 weeks or so. You can start to see it. There's two things that I'm concerned about with the Dallas Cowboys. Number one, they played a great game last Thursday. And neither one of you guys necessarily picked up on it. It's hard to play at that energy level.
Right.
They brought some energy. Look at the amount of celebrations, how many times the team came together. Those are the little intangibles I watch when I watch a game. So not only were they excellent, is Jalen Smith going to be running sideline to sideline like he was running after Alvin Kamara in that game, the way he tracked him down and put that big hit on him? That's hard to duplicate week in and week out. The reason why I tell guys, man, practice on your fundamentals, because those things will come back to you if you feel good, if you don't feel good. So this is a young team, and we've seen this in the league, Mark. You can lean on emotion when you're a young team. You've got more energy. Mm-hmm. You can be a little more reckless. As you start to become a veteran player, you understand, I must conserve my energy. Now, you as an offensive linemen think that all the time. Man, all that jumping around, celebrating, they don't do a whole bunch of that. It's hard to move all this fat. So that's something I want to watch in this Eagles game, divisional game. Do they come out? And I want it the same intensity. Same intensity,
right?
Because I believe with the youth of that team, that can carry them for a couple more weeks. I believe they can duplicate this. I'm excited to see the Cowboys, how they build on that tremendous win last week against the Saints.
It's easier to respond to failure than it is to respond to success.
Sure.
Because when guys have success, especially young teams, they're so busy patting themselves on the back that they don't prepare like they prepared for that game in New Orleans or that game at home against New Orleans. So
there's a fear component.
Right.
Like when you're preparing, you're like, man, I can get embarrassed. The details become very, very important.
And you get that. I mean, you get that with young teams. I mean, you get it with everybody. It's human nature. I think the other thing, you know, and I don't give Amari Cooper enough credit, but what they have done going out and getting Amari Cooper, at the time it looked like, oh, they gave up a lot for Amari Cooper. What he has done, the component of him being outside, and you have to be accountable for him, what that has done to their running game has also, the complementary nature of football. They've got a guy that strikes a bit of fear into you that,
yes,
you have to be, that you have to be concerned about, and what that's done to that side of the football field for their running game has been, it's been one of those things, I don't know how you calculate that, but it's been a huge step
for them. Well, one thing that they've done is, the defenses are playing the Cowboys very, very similar to when he wasn't there. But what happens is he's making the defense pay because they got so many guys in the box. If he makes one guy miss, and also Dallas has made the adjustment not only at left guard, but putting Michael Gallup on the outside. So him and Amari Cooper, they got more speed on the field.
Right.
Like they can take more shots at you.
They can put real fear into the defense a little bit.
Right. I mean, they became a lot faster football team by making those guys primarily the wide receivers outside.
We started the segment talking about the defense. This is a league where we saw quarterbacks are playing better. Offenses are putting up far more points. That seems to be the standard, except for the Dallas Cowboys. Is this defense, Nick, good enough to carry the team when their offense is not playing standard to the rest of the league?
To C's point, if they can play at the level they did against New Orleans, absolutely yes. Now, that is incredibly hard to duplicate, right? Like you were talking about, the fear of being embarrassed. National television, playing arguably the best team in football. Here's what I'll say for the Cowboys. Going into last week's game, you had New Orleans and Philly coming at home. If they could only win one of those games, the far more important game is the one that's coming up. Losing to Philly will undo everything that happened against New Orleans because it's a divisional game. It's the team chasing you in the division. So it can all be undone here in about 96 hours if they can't handle their business against Philly. But if they can, then you're talking about a team that's won five straight. You're talking about a team that knows who it is. They're a defense team with a great running back and, as you were talking about, one very good wide receiver who puts legit fear in opponent and another wide receiver, Michael Gallup, who, guess what? It's week 13. Doesn't look like a rookie as much anymore. Mm-hmm. It has a better idea of what the NFL speed right. is. And so that's where it is. They are playing. Them and the Ravens are the two teams in Seattle, I guess, kind of trying to play an older school style of football in 2018. But I know C believes that style is going to become more in vogue as the weather gets colder, even though Dallas doesn't have to worry about that. So we'll see how long they can keep it going.
All right, let's take a break. Mark, stick around. Coming up, could the Patriot way be the key to Aaron Rodgers winning another Super Bowl? We'll explain next. First things first. Saturday, Coach Calipari brings his 10th-ranked Wildcats to Fox. Reed Travis leads Kentucky's front court into battle against Seton Hall. Don't miss the City Hoops Classic Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
I got to get somebody some tickets on the staff. I was supposed to be sitting courtside, Stink, but yeah, I'll be working with you in Cleveland.
Ooh, that's better. Cleveland better for you.
Cleveland better for you.
Worked out for someone else, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Back here with Mark Schlereth, and we are going viral. The age-old question of how sumo wrestlers sign their autograph can now be put to rest.
Oh, that's an efficient method.
Takayushu showcasing the unique rhythmic motion.
Well, he still can't shave his back, though, can he?
Oh, come on.
I just wonder if you have a similar rhythm.
Oh, yes.
You sumo wrestles.
Yes.
That y'all gonna make Sting take his shirt off.
You guys know I can't bend my knees that far.
That far.
Come on, stop it.
Looks good, though.
This guy's got some hairy knees, too,
yeah.
Stink.
The whole thing. It looks like just I got a wax chest. Who is that fella?
Yeah, that's nice.
Oh, that right. is Mark Schlereth. Yeah. Okay.
Time for stories to start your morning. Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. The most highly questioned shoulder injury debate might be over. A lot of people wondering whether Markelle Fultz's shooting woes were physical or mental. Turns out he has nerve issues in his neck and shoulder. The second-year point guard will now be out 3 to 6 weeks rehabbing. Nick, what'd you make of this?
I think it's ridiculous that he had to go to 10 outside experts to get this diagnosed. This was the exact thing. Thoracic outlet syndrome. People were just random folks on Twitter were speculating about the last 6 weeks that this is what his issue was. I don't know how much the issue is mental in addition to the physical injury, but Philly's medical staff has had this player in-house for a year and a half, and that he has to go outside to get a legit diagnosis, that ain't great.
I think it's legitimate. It's definitely like the kid just woke up and said, you know, how can I sabotage my career?
Oh, for
it's
sure.
more going on than him than mentally. Like, I believe he seriously got a problem, and he's trying to get it right. He is not fit to play in the NBA right. Something's wrong with him, and it's not his head.
All right, moving on to the Cowboys now. Young linebackers Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch have been outstanding for the Cowboys this season, but according to Jerry Jones, Sean Lee will be the starter whenever he gets healthy and can play again. Should the Cowboys stick with the young guys or go back to Lee, CeCe?
This is a tough one here. This is one of the things, if you're a good player in the league, how do they transition that younger player to taking your spot? Because ultimately, Stink, we know you got to go. There's going to be a better player going to take your spot. I believe they're making a mistake by doing this because I believe that Vander Esch poses a different set of problems for Dallas. Dallas is easier to run on with Sean Lee because he's undersized. Van Der Esch has that power, speed, and also look at the energy him and Jalen Smith have playing together. They're a special combination.
Right. It's not like Van Der Esch isn't going to see the field again. You may start Sean Lee, but I'm guaranteeing you Van Der Esch is going to spend a lot of time on the football field. It gives you a nice rotation there, but I'm with you, man. He has earned the right to be there. And I think they'll probably play him a lot more than they play Sean Lee, even if they start Sean Lee.
All right, finally, speculation over who will replace Mike McCarthy in Green Bay. The current betting favorite, former Broncos head coach and Pat's current offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels. Stank, would this be a good fit for Green Bay, for Aaron Rodgers?
Well, I think you have to understand, when you're talking Josh McDaniels, you're talking about a guy that puts people in position to win. Like, he understands. Now, when you coach for the Patriots, you start on the opposite side of the ball. So he started on the defensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes and transitions to the offensive side of the ball. And they do that with the Patriots so that you understand, when you're game planning, what the rules of coverage are, where guys have to be, how to leverage guys. So they do this with everybody. I mean, like Matt Patricia, defensive coordinator forever. He started on the offensive side of the ball. He was an offensive line coach. And so this is something that they do within their organization. So his ability to find guys and to get guys open and to exploit defenses, talking to guys that he coached in Denver when he was the head coach, they will tell you, absolutely brilliant when it comes. Like, he would tell you, this is what's going to happen, this is what they're going to do, this is how we're going to attack it. And it would come out exactly like he said. So he is great with that stuff. He is going to have to learn how to be his own man. And I think that's the biggest thing coming from New England is
your own man. Like, what are you?
Like preaching, this is the Patriot way. This is the way we did it with the Patriots. Here's how we did it. This is Bill Belichick. Like, you walk into the organization and guys automatically roll their eyes.
Because that was
they want authenticity.
Denver, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they want authenticity. They don't want you to be Bill Belichick Jr.
And we know
and that's hard. And that's hard to do.
Right. I mean, maybe Nick Saban is as close to two people as personality, but Bill Belichick and his overall personality, it can't be duplicated.
Right, and you already come in, if you have coached within that organization, you already come in with this stigma of, well, he failed in Denver, and, you know, look at the other coaches, look at the Charlie Weisses.
And he had to hiccup with how he was originally
going to go to Indianapolis, and then he decided not to do that. So you already come in from a player's perspective. They're already scrutinizing you. They're looking at you going, okay, who's this guy going to be? And I think, one, he has learned from his time in Denver. Like, he has definitely learned from that. There's no question in my mind, because you couldn't go through what he's gone through and not learn from it. But it's still, as a player, you're still gonna scrutinize that just because of where he comes from.
And from a football standpoint, I don't have questions. I think he's the best of the bunch of the New England offensive coordinators. I think he's better than Bill O'Brien. I think he's clearly better as a coach than Charlie Weiss, like as a head coach potentially, I should say. My worry with Josh McDaniels is the same one I had before he backed out of Indy. It's a who is this guy question. Like, he skirted the rules in Denver. He had problems with relationships in Denver. And then he gets brought back into the fold in New England, gets a second chance in Indy, and screws them. Now, they ended up, I'm sure they're very happy with Frank Reich. I bet if they had to do it all over again, they maybe would have made Frank Reich their first choice instead of their third choice. But 1 year removed from him agreeing to take a job and then backing out after whatever was said in that Belichick-Kraft meeting, to me, there's a level of toxicity around Josh McDaniels, the guy, rather than the coach, that would make me very hesitant to make him my football coach 1 year removed from what happened in it.
I think Josh is going to be a good coach. I think he's a good football coach right now. I don't think he's going to be a good fit for the Packers, because I don't think the Packers are going to have a chance. All right? Robert Kraft. When he selected Belichick, what was it? What did he trade for him? The value. What did he trade for him?
Traded a first-round pick back to the Jets for Bill Belichick.
Right. Now, that's the owner, still owner of New England.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, when Josh was getting ready to go to Indianapolis, who did he talk to?
Yeah.
Josh.
The owner talked to Josh before he left, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was with him and Belichick and Kraft. They had a meeting. So, he's already selected, without a first-round pick, he's already selected his next coach. Just like he traded the Jets. Hey, man, you guys got my guy. How much is it going to take to get him? It's going to take this? Okay. That's what. And this is the way Kraft does business. Last year, he thought his next coach was going out the door. He sweetened the kitty to let him know, this is your spot. This is your team. Now, who do y'all think he wants to work for? Y'all think Josh is getting ready to leave the Kraft and go to Green Bay and deal with the hierarchy there, or he's going to stay with the Kraft family? So I don't even think it's on the board for him. I'm just going to tell you guys a name. Watch out for Jim Harbaugh, because Jim Harbaugh potentially is trying to get his way out of Michigan. All right? I got good sources that are telling me not only Green Bay, but also watch out for the Cleveland Browns. He likes the quarterback situations there, and I believe that there is front office people in Green Bay who are enamored with Jim Harbaugh and potentially trying to get him to come to Green Bay. So I don't even think Josh is going to be made available for the Packers, and I think other people have their eyes on the Packers job.
Well, these are big names that are being swirled around. How much does coaching Aaron Rodgers factor into a Harbaugh or a McDaniels or any of it?
It's the biggest factor. Right? Like the Coach Mangini talks about this all the time, that when you are choosing jobs, if you are lucky enough, fortunate enough, I should say, to have your choice of jobs, you look at, is there a quarterback in place? Is there a good quarterback in place? Is there a plan at quarterback in place? And no matter what personality issues or questions people have about Aaron Rodgers, nobody questions that he's one of the two best quarterbacks in all of football. And even though he's 35 years old, whoever takes that job is going to have Aaron Rodgers for the first half decade they're coaching there. So the reason that a guy like Jim Harbaugh would be just focusing on Green Bay or Cleveland
because they have
is because of Aaron Rodgers and Baker Mayfield.
The thing I would be careful about, because the number one thing for me is not quarterback, it's organization. Who am I partnering with? Who am I trying to put this team together with? Because right now you can say, John Gruden, he got fooled on that one. Oh, man, get you a quarterback. Better be careful, because you might not have the guy you think. And also from an organizational standpoint, how am I going to be able to win games? Because quarterback will keep you in the game, but it's not going to win you all the games. So the organizational support becomes a very, very big, big deal. These guys, these coaches, they love to have a quarterback, but there's so many good to decent quarterbacks that I don't think there's the huge separation. And I think that Aaron Rodgers might not embrace being coached by the guy who coached Tom Brady, because he's always getting that comparison all the time.
All right, speaking of Baker Mayfield, let's move on and talk about him. The first overall pick's having a pretty good rookie year despite losing his head coach, Hugh Jackson. Speculation continues over who will be Jackson's eventual replacement in Cleveland. Former Packer, current Brown center, J.C. Treader, says Mike McCarthy would do great as Baker's head coach. All right, a lot of names being swirled around. CC, you think Mike McCarthy would be a good fit for Baker?
Yeah, I think Mike McCarthy would be a good fit, absent of Baker, because him and the general manager. You have continuity there. You have togetherness there. You have a belief system between the two of them, growing up in the Packers organization. So I'm not going to be just centered around the quarterback. All these head coaching jobs, we're going to talk about the quarterback. You need a lot of other things besides a quarterback. We got a lot of good quarterbacks. Well, in Green Bay, they got a good quarterback, right? Mm. They played 12 games, right? How many games they won?
Four.
Oh, okay. So we better start talking about more than the quarterback when we're talking about these jobs and these general managers and how they're going to be support these head coaches, I believe, becomes pretty important. Baker Mayfield needs someone to be able to groom him. I think McCarthy has the football intellect to be able to do that thing.
Yeah, I agree with you on the football intellect. I agree with you on, I think the great teams are built from the inside out. You control the line of scrimmage in this, regardless of who your quarterback is. You control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the line of scrimmage, defensively and offensively. You're going to have a chance to be in every game. I mean, that's the way it goes. And that's the hardest thing right now. You talk about grooming quarterbacks coming out of college. I talk to general manager every week. You know what the harder thing is right now? Find an offensive lineman that can play.
Yeah, so people looking at this Cleveland job, right. Yeah, you might have your eyes on, man, Dorsey, I'd like to be able to work with him. Man, Baker Mayfield, like to be him. But Stink and I, we happen to be calling this game this week. I think Stink kind of likes that offensive line they got there.
Well, there's no question, and I think that's the thing. You look at a football team, the guys that win, quarterbacks can get you so far. And obviously you want a guy that can erase a lot of mistakes, but you've got to have a complete football team. And I'm with you on the continuity, Dorsey, McCarthy. And I will tell you this about a coach sometimes. Sometimes when it comes to culture, you need an adult to come in. You know what I'm saying? And Mike McCarthy is an adult. Like, you need some of that balance. You need some of that discipline. You need some of that grinding.
That's what Kansas City needed with Andy Reid.
Right.
Brought him in. You could see transition that organization, that offense immediately.
Well, and listen, to before we get to the specifics on the Cleveland Browns, Mike McCarthy, to your guys' point about the you can't base your decision just on the quarterback and you need more than the quarterback. We know that the New Orleans Saints went 7-9 three straight years with Drew Brees.
Right.
A quarterback alone does not make you a championship team. But not having one can eliminate you no matter how good the rest of your team is. Like, that is something, and that's why I think there is the extra emphasis on this, is that doesn't make you, but not having one absolutely can break you. The Nick Foles story notwithstanding, and some of the other things we've seen in recent years. Now, as far as the Cleveland Browns go, I was one of the people loudest saying I thought Mike McCarthy needed to go from Green Bay. I did not think he was the right fit for Green Bay. That does not mean he's not the right fit for Cleveland. Sometimes a coach that is a great coach to get you from A to B is not the best coach to keep you at B or get you from B to C. I think in Green Bay, either the message gotten stale or it had run its course. Whatever it was, they needed a change.
Well, they only got two players really been there the whole time. That's Aaron Rodgers and the kicker. So if the message got stale going to two people, you ain't even giving the kicker no speech.
Well, sure, you're right. It was
okay.
A turnover
so,
in the league.
So when you talk about getting stale, it was going in one guy's ears. It was stale to him.
Sure.
So let's identify that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that I thought that went without saying that it was that we know with Mike McCarthy the biggest issue there, in addition to the record, was the relationship with Aaron Rodgers. But that doesn't mean Mike McCarthy wouldn't be a good head coach for the Cleveland Browns. And one thing, even though I'm critical about some of his game management stuff, whatever that is, that what Cleveland needs is a coach they're not going to fire in 2 years. That's what they need more than anything, is to not be having this discussion again to where Baker Mayfield's going to be on his third full-time head coach when he enters year four of his career, where the Browns are just on this endless conveyor belt of GMs and coaches. And so if you can, they think they've got their guy in John Dorsey, the first GM they feel like is going to stick around there since really Jimmy Haslam took over the team. If you can marry him to a coach that he has a relationship with, a coach that we know at worst case scenario is an average NFL head coach, and best case scenario is a markedly above average NFL head coach. Right. So then,
I don't think you can be an average NFL coach and win a Super Bowl. I don't believe you have talent superior anywhere that you can be an average. Barry Switzer, I believe, is the last average coach to be able to win a Super Bowl, to be able to run that gauntlet. Like, I believe Doug Peterson is above an average coach. I do believe that because he was in too many pressure situations and made great decisions. Now, how long is it going to take for him before we start seeing it in all areas? But let me tell you something. Doug Peterson in that Super Bowl was anything but average. He looked at Bill Belichick eye to eye for 60 minutes and did not blink.
Sure, yes.
You don't have to defend him. I'm just telling you, I've been in enough big games. You've been in Super Bowl games, and you know average people, they don't. Man, that's a pressure cooker. And it's not about luck. What I saw in those situations, it gives me an indication, yes, he has that special stuff. Now, how does he build on it? How does he grow from it? That no one knows.
Agreed. But I think you can have great moments. John Gruden won a Super Bowl. Right now, I think he's a below average coach.
No. His defense. Look at the way that game planned out. Also, look. Wait 1 second. Before that Super Bowl, their center went AWOL.
Yeah.
They were going to win that Super Bowl, so don't tell John Gruden won himself a Super Bowl. Well, man, it was slanted in his favor. I mean, when they kicked the ball off.
Sure. But again, I said the worst case scenario for Mike McCarthy is that he's average. I think that the best case scenario is markedly above average. The point is, what Cleveland needs is not a disaster. What Cleveland needs is not a coach that there is going to be on the hot seat 20 right. games into his tenure, and McCarthy absolutely right. would not be in
and
that
And a coach
position.
And a general manager that see the game the same way, that are in lockstep in their decisions on who they're going to put on this team and who they're going to surround Baker Mayfield with. That's really the goal there in Cleveland. And if they can get that done, you watch Cleveland, you look at them on film, they're an up-and-coming team. They're a much better team than they've been in past years. There's no question about that.
All right, we got to the bottom of that one. Coming up, can the Steelers overcome the loss of James Conner? That's next. This is First Things First. Back here, First Things First, with Mark Schlereth. Stink, it's been a rough couple of weeks for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've lost their last two games and apparently their last two running backs. sort of. Bella's out, that we know. And now James Conner's ankle injury.
I don't think they really had that other guy ever.
Is worse than we thought.
Hard to lose it when you don't have it.
James Conner's been ruled out for Sunday's game against the Raiders. Ben Roethlisberger is running out of people to throw under the bus. Mark, how concerning is Conner's injury for the Steelers?
Well, I think it's obviously a big concern. James Conner's been great both running the ball and in the backfield. Mm-hmm. You've got backs, there's no question. You know, the one thing about...
Baby got back?
Yeah, baby got back. Pittsburgh got back. But listen,
it's about an anaconda.
Right. Okay. No. Is that what it's about?
Yesterday.
Well, Samuels comes in the fourth quarter last week, runs a little halfback option, catches the ball, boom, scores. So, I mean, Ridley is there now, the former Patriot. So, you've got guys to replace him there, but there's a reason certain guys start for length of time and certain guys are backups because they practice them. They understand who's who. So does it hurt them? Yeah, James Conner is, I don't know where he is, close to 1,000 yards. I mean, the guy has been phenomenal for them. And do I think James Conner is as good as Le'Veon Bell? Absolutely not. There's no real comparison to the two. He's a great back. He's a different back.
But then when you tease that forward, is the guy backing up James Conner?
Right, but that's what I'm saying. You're getting to your, you know, when you start, I did San Francisco's game last week. You're starting guys on offense in San Francisco that started the fourth preseason game.
Right. They were practice squad guys.
Across the board, all over the place, your quarterback, your receiving core, your running backs. Like, when you get to that point, there's a reason those guys start the fourth preseason game because most of them will be looking for work or watching from the couch. And so when you start to play those guys, of course it hurts you as a football team. Do I think they have the offensive awareness and personnel to overcome it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they do. They've got a good group up front. They've got a couple of tight ends that can be difference makers, can be matchup guys. You're going to have to load them up a little bit more. As a temporary fix until Conner hopefully is back in 2 to 3 weeks, whatever that ankle injury is going to, you know, whatever, however much it's going to hamper him.
I would be the biggest concern for me about James Conner is I don't think it is a 2 to 3 week timeline. If it's truly a high ankle sprain, we have seen guys miss a month, and then when they come back,
that's my diagnosis. No one else says high ankle sprain. That's what I'm saying.
Right, yeah. And I'm
based on the way they felt.
Well, sometimes Nick listens to me, sometimes he don't listen to me. Yeah. So he might have had another source told him about high ankle sprain.
On injuries in particular, I trust your eye. And if there is,
but head coaches, but go ahead.
We can have a difference of philosophy on head coaches. On injuries, I will trust your eye particularly. High ankle sprains, we've seen guys miss a month and be hampered for a few weeks after that. Now, do I think the Steelers, at their best, have a dynamic enough passing attack to still play with or beat anybody? Yeah, they do. In an individual game or maybe even over a few weeks stretch. But that means Ben Roethlisberger needs to start playing better. And the Steelers right now are bottom five in the league in turnover margin. Mm. The four teams that have a worse turnover margin than them are the Niners, Bucks, Jags, and Cardinals. Four of the worst teams in the league. Those are the only teams with the worst turnover margin. None of those teams have more than four wins. Mm-hmm. They have been able to overcome that this year, but that's not sustainable. The most telling stat in all of football year to year is where were you in turnover margin? Where are you in the standings? Sure. Those are almost always directly correlated. So if they are going to be able to deal with no James Conner, Big Ben in the passing game doesn't only have to be more dynamic, but it has to, while being more dynamic, be more careful. And those are that's a hard juggling act.
I think if you look at all the playoff teams, and I'm going down them right now, Kansas City, the Pats, Texans on AFC, going to the NFC, Rams, Saints, Bears, there's not a team here that's going to lose their running back and feel very, very comfortable. Mm. When you look at running back depth, there is none around the league. One place, Jacksonville, because of the style for which they run, guess who they got? They got Fournette, they got Carlos Hyde, and they got T.J. Yeldon. That's the only team. So if you're looking at Pittsburgh saying, maybe Pittsburgh mismanaged their stat. No, they didn't. They got a Hall of Fame quarterback. They got two big-time receivers. They got 83 and 81 catches in Schuster and Brown. And then you go down to their tight ends. They got a couple tight ends that can play. We know about Vance McDonald, good speed guy. He's got 40 catches. So when you have injuries like that, you don't necessarily always look to the running back. You looked at, man, how can I throw one to Switzer in the flat? How can I throw to some of these other guys? How can I play three and four wide receivers compared to a traditional running back set? There is no depth in the league. Ain't no great backup running running backs in this league. That's the reason why they are backups, because their inability to be what? Either special running the ball or special coming out of the backfield. So I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are still situated to be able to move forward. Ben's got to be able to play better, of course. But they should rely on the talent that they have, and they are set up to be a three-wide receiver, one tight end set.
Where is Jesse James? Where is he in catches? Because they have McDonald, yep, and they have Jesse James.
Yeah, he's fifth with 27.
Okay, yes. So you've got two tight ends, and then this is a personnel grouping thing. You want to come in with a two tights, one back formation, or you want to start mixing people up. They've got guys that can match up. They've got guys that can match up all over the place. When you have Brown and Schuster, man, you're going to get one-on-ones everywhere else. I mean, that's just the way it is. So they have got guys in the passing game. They can take over the slack that you're losing from losing a big-time running back in the passing game phase.
And they have the luxury of they got a one-week bye. Let's go out there against John Gruden and the Raiders. Let's experiment. Because almost anything they're going to do is going to get him a win in Oakland. So at least they have 2 weeks before they can adjust. I believe James Conner is going to miss a couple games. I do not believe that's a regular ankle sprain. I do believe it is severe, especially with them ruling him out on a Tuesday. And anytime a team rules you out on Tuesday, that means there is significant swelling and or the inability to be able to walk. If you can't walk on a Tuesday and they rule you out, there's a slim, slim chance you're going to be ready.
If we see video of James Conner today, see, you think he's in a walking boot?
At least.
Yeah.
I mean, he's out.
Right. So
they have him, preventative measures. They know he's week number two is the first time that he's going to be able to see some action. I doubt he's going to be able to do that.
Stink. See you back here tomorrow.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, guys. Got to take a break. Coming up, what's next for Ohio State with Urban Meyer stepping down? That's ahead. First things first. Back here, first things first. Urban Meyer announced yesterday he will retire after his Buckeyes face Washington in the Rose Bowl. He's been battling effects of a cyst in his brain, which caused severe stress-related headaches, something he's been dealing with for years now. Meyer spent 7 years at Ohio State, winning over 90% of his games, including a national title in 2014. Here is Coach Meyer.
My goal has always been to make this one of the premier and most comprehensive programs in America. It has always been a goal to see a healthy, strong program handed to an elite coach in person to make it even better. And I want to congratulate Ryan Day and his family. We've worked extremely hard to make the great state of Ohio, the university community, including our alumni and former players, and Buckeye Nation very proud.
CeCe, yesterday when this news broke, you talked a lot about Urban Meyer, the man, your friend, the coach. Today I want to ask you from Ohio State's perspective, where does his retirement leave the university? Where does it leave the Buckeyes?
Yeah, I think we're in good shape. We covered the NFL, and we covered it very so hard. Right now in the NFL, everyone's looking for the next Sean McVay. And Ohio State, Gene Smith, Urban Meyer, they feel like they got the Sean McVay that they wanted. Not only from an offensive standpoint, but with energy and creation of offensive, explosive football. Like, defensive football, it will always be a part of the game. It's significant. But if you can't play offensive football, if you can't throw the ball, if you can't come up with creative things based on your fan base and based on the kids, what do the kids want to do? A lot of times, man, kids, it's not, oh, coach, I believe, because they see so much spread, they see so much four or five receivers on the field. That's the way they want to play. And Urban Meyer, he's been a part. Not only was he able to create a great legacy there at Ohio State, but he was able to be a part of the transition plan. So they've recruited very, very well over the last 5 years. And Urban's been there 7, but I like to look at a 5-year window because that's really the cycle in college football. So they're stacked. They had a couple good quarterbacks on their roster. If Haskins comes back, let's not forget Haskins is a sophomore. He's not a redshirt junior. So he could play 2 more years at college. They got Tate Martell, the kid from Vegas, who was a 5-star recruit. I believe built in the I would say the more of the mode of the quarterbacks Urban had before, where they're a dual threat. All right. He can throw the ball, but he can also run the ball. Not too different than the quarterback that was Ohio to JT Barrett. Not too much different than him. Skill-wise, man, they are stacked. They got a five-star recruit coming from Austin, Texas. I know everyone's out there trying to visit him today, but he reaffirmed his commitment yesterday. They got another.
He softened off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nick Saban is on the trail. Yeah. He's going to visit the kid that we have, Jordan Battle at St. Thomas Aquinas. He's a four-star safety. Nick Saban's got a home visit today. So people are trying to get Urban's recruit.
Yep.
But, man, it's stacked at Ohio State. They got good players, and people tend to forget. Urban did take over a team that the program for that 1 year was not in good shape. But Jim Tressel was 56-9 his last 5 years at Ohio State. So they have been winning. They have always won, and they will continue to win. And not only Urban Meyer is committed to them winning and committed to Ryan Day, not only people like him, but people like myself. We're a big part of the university, and we're committed to making sure that Ryan Day is going to be a winner, and we're committed to showing him the resources and the same thing all those other coaches had a great opportunity to do. John Cooper had, Tressel had, and Urban Meyer had after that. So we're going to support him the same way we supported Urban Meyer.
I've heard you talking about Ryan Day for quite some time now, before any of this news became public. And I know we talked about his history as a coordinator up against the D coordinator at Michigan when that game was coming up. I know you have tremendous faith in Ryan Day, and I know obviously Urban Meyer did. I also know from being around you for the last couple years, I've learned more about Ohio State's history than I ever thought I would. I knew they were one of the all-time great programs, but they have won in basically every generation. So I understand that. I also think people should know, even if they will be fine without Urban Meyer, you cannot truly replace Urban Meyer. Like, Urban Meyer has coached college football for 17 years. From 01 to 2018, he's coached every year except for the 1 year off. If he wins the Rose Bowl, he will have 187 wins. That is exactly 11 wins per season. That's despite having 4 years where he coached at Bowling Green and Utah when there was only 11 games in a regular season. Since he's been at big-time programs at Florida and Ohio State, he has three national championships. All elsewhere on his resume are two undefeated seasons without a national championship when he wasn't eligible, literally, his first year at Ohio State and figuratively his last year at Utah. Like, he is right behind Nick Saban as the unquestioned second greatest coach of this era of college football that dates back to basically when Chris was playing. And so that is who is walking out the door. It doesn't mean Ohio State's going to crumble. It's not a situation where if Boise loses Chris Peterson and they have to totally rebuild things. Why? It's not that, of course, but they are losing a Mount Rushmore coach of the modern era.
And if it wasn't for his health, in the last year or so, Urban and I have talked about future, like what he wanted to do, and he talked about potentially coaching like 3 to 5 years. And this was last year. And it's nice to be able to talk about it now because now he's out of the game and everything. I can give away a lot of trade secrets and stuff.
Urban, his social security number is 128.
Yes, yes. He likes ice cream. He likes warm bubble baths. But the thing about Urban was he really thought over the next 3 to 5 years, he was going to get in the college playoff at least twice. He thought he was going to have the ability to win a couple national championships. So that thought process will still be in place. Yeah, you can go over the records, what they've done the last 20 years, but I believe it's a special time at Ohio State. Man, we don't have any facility problems. Man, our schedule's set up nice. Gene Smith and the coach are moving forward in the same direction. And when you have quarterbacks, you know you're going to have big people. You're in the Midwest. We always have good offense and defensive linemen. So Ryan Day has set himself up that as Lincoln Riley, because they studied the Oklahoma model, Bob Stoops, and handing it over to Lincoln Riley. So that's what are they in the college playoff?
Yes.
Oh, okay, with the new coach?
Right.
Oh, okay.
After Bob Stoops takes him to the playoff, he leaves Lincoln Riley's.
So what Urban did and in positioning this guy, it's one of the special, special transitions that you're going to be able to see in college football. Very, very rare to see. You saw the athletic director yesterday. Guy asked him, well, what have you talked to Ryan about? What are your expectations? Gene Smith reached across and said, not laughing, I expect you to win games. And that's the mandate of every Ohio State coach.
We talked last second about the possibility of Harbaugh maybe leaving. Does Harbaugh now look at Ryan Day and say, oh, I got a shot. I'm going to stick around for a couple of years.
If Harbaugh doesn't look at this as, no matter how good of a coach Ryan Day will prove to be, if he doesn't look at this as an opening, then then I don't know what's wrong with him. Now, that doesn't mean NFL dreams would trump that. But, of course, they're just for the same reasons that there are guys trying to go poach Urban's recruits. All of college football has to at least right now be saying there is an air of uncertainty until we see Ryan Day coach, just like there was with Lincoln Riley until we saw him coach.
Jim Harbaugh needs to do something that I've only seen a very few coaches do. And Bill Belichick, the greatest coach, he was the best at it.
Really?
Where understanding, yes, I've learned defensive, but how can I grow? How can I grow what I know from a football standpoint? Jim Harbaugh needs to go somewhere and understand the passing game and realizes this is not Bo Schembechler. This is not Woody Hayes. And I don't care if you're trying to do that in college or you're trying to do it at a pro level, you cannot run the ball through people. You can run the ball to be able to move it, but you don't score points. You got to score points through the passing game. And Jim Harbaugh's best, when he was at San Francisco, people think he was a great offensive coach. They peaked from a passing game standpoint at 23rd. That was the best. Last year, his fourth year at Michigan, he peaked at 53rd ranked of 122 teams NCAA Division I. So, hey, Jim, man, you need to make some changes, and it happens with your passing game. It's not running game. No, the game is about throwing it, advancing the ball down the field through the air, and that's the part that Harbaugh has missed on.
You're asking for a reinvention. And what is the hardest thing for rich, successful, grown men to do, see? Change.
Or be act broke.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Yeah, but you're asking him to do. You're asking him to do something that is very. There's a reason it's.
Other coach Urban Meyer. If you look at his style, never had a 1,000-yard rusher. What, Bowling Green, Utah? No. They used to throw the ball sideways, run speed sweeps. Huh? What has he done the last three out of the last 4 years?
He changed.
And
Belichick
rusher.
Changed over this last decade from defense offense focus.
Nick Saban. What is he doing?
He changed. But we are talking about three. So use the phrase again, Mount Rushmore guys. And Harbaugh appears to be a tick beneath that.
At least a tick.
A tick or two.
I mean, what has he won?
A tick or two.
Got to take a break.
We need to stay
coming
off
up,
the coaches.
Why is Klay Thompson taking a shot at LeBron next on First Things First?
Man, we need to have a meeting about this. Nick cannot analyze the coaches. Leave the coach. Stay off the coaching corner.
Stories to start your morning. By the unexpected energy
and
of ExxonMobil. I'll take my job back.
Check our Instagram, America. Almost same height as Chris Carter. Go ahead.
Young linebackers Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch have been outstanding for the Cowboys this season, but according to Jerry Jones, Sean Lee will be the starter whenever he gets healthy and can play again. CC, what do you think? Should the Cowboys stick with the young guys or go back to Lee?
Well, that's a very good question, and it's on the board now because typically we say, man, you do not lose your starting position due to injury. But why did the Cowboys in the first round decide, you know something, we need another linebacker. After all offseason saying, Jalen Smith is removing the brace from his foot. He's returning to form when he was at Notre Dame. They drafted him to be a replacement. So I'm going with the young guys. Vander Esch, Pro Football Focus has him one of the top three ranked linebackers playing.
Not Sean rookie Lee, linebackers, just
Sean
linebackers.
Lee, Hey, bro, this is the real. This ain't Penn State. This is the NFL.
And while you might not lose your job due to one injury, you can lose your job due to a habitual injury. And that's what Sean Lee has been over the past few years, habitually injured.
Yep.
And, like, Leighton Vander Esch is better. You often lose your job because somebody's better.
Right. If you get injured, you better have some talent like Jenna Wolf. You know, Jenna could take some days off because we can't replace her and everything.
Right.
She's going to get sick. She got a couple bad kids. They're going to get mama sick.
Right.
But, like, Brian get another bloody nose. He out.
That's the second day in a row. It's so funny if you know Brian. You don't know him, but I promise it's funny.
A little basketball now. The most highly questioned shoulder injury debate might be over. A lot of people wondering whether Markelle Fultz's shooting woes were physical or mental. Turns out he has nerve issues in his neck and shoulder. Second-year point guard will be out 3 to 6 weeks rehabbing. Nick, what did you think of this?
I hope he gets it fixed. I'm glad he finally got a legitimate diagnosis. I don't know why he had to leave the Sixers franchise and go to 10 doctors to find what people months ago were speculating on Twitter. It was a thoracic outlet syndrome. The mental. mental part of it to me was when he got to the point of bobbing the ball back and forth, he was going to try anything. His confidence clearly been shot, but now we know it wasn't just a mental thing. There was a significant physical injury. Hopefully he can rehab and get back to who he was at Washington.
Jen and I have real concerns for him because we think it's more than mental. We believe it to be physical, and you don't just become a great athlete first pick in the draft. Now, all of a sudden, I can't shoot the ball. That thing he did right there at the Philadelphia game, I was sitting right up under that bucket when he did it. And there wasn't nothing funny about it. To see a great athlete to be able to struggle with the small little things, yes, he had to go see 10 doctors, man. His career is at stake. I hope he gets some help and get that right.
I think it's better news now that we know there's a physical ailment. If it was just because there's rehab for that, if it was just a mental thing, some guys just get a block.
Or
we saw Chuck Knobloch.
Chuck
right.
Knobloch
and
had
so
the yips. And
I think this is actually good news for him in the Sixers.
Yeah, I think there's some type of strand or something you can do to get that out of your giddy up. I'm sure there's something. My doctor, I give him something.
Finally,
Rich, you like that form? You see that elbow in? Yeah, still getting
Cavs
buckets.
Tonight, a Cleveland team that in no way resembles the one that beat Golden State in the 2016 finals. In a recent article in The Athletic, players shared memories from the Warriors-Cavs rivalry, and when asked about the time the Cavs mocked the Warriors after coming back from down 3-1 in the finals, Klay Thompson said this: "That was funny. Look how that turned out. Psh, bums. That was crazy. I forgot about that. Well, look at what pettiness gets you. Gets you 1-8 in the finals, idiots." I feel like I didn't do my best, Clay. Nick, what's your reaction to this?
I really like Klay Thompson. He's one of the coolest dudes in the league. He is one of the most consistent guys in the league. But Klay's talked out the side of his mouth like this once before. It was right before the Cavs mocked the Warriors for blowing the 3-1 lead. It's when the Warriors were up 3-1 in the finals. And he reminded LeBron James, it's a man's game. There's no whining in the NBA. There's no crying in basketball. And how did LeBron and our friend Richard Jefferson and those Cavs respond? Oh, a 73-win team blew a 3-1 lead in the finals thanks to LeBron going 41-16-7, 41-8-11, and then 27-11-11, the greatest three-game stretch in NBA history. And then how did the Warriors respond? Draymond crying in the parking lot, begging Kevin Durant to come save him. So, yeah, and then from that moment forward, they did go 8-1 against the Cavs in the NBA Finals. But there's a little bit of history being left out there. And I don't think the cookies at LeBron's Halloween party had anything to do with the Warriors going 8-1 in the NBA Finals since then. I think them adding that 7-foot-1 freak had a lot to do with them going 8-1 in the Finals. So, I like Klay. I think there's a little misrepresentation of NBA history, though.
I like Klay. No need to add too much to that. I like Klay. I like what he said. Every once in a while, I like the little pettiness the guy has come back. Klay, he should have said something, but this has been an extraordinary run that they have been on, and ultimately, at the end, the joke is on the rest of the league. It's not on the Warriors because they got the rings.
That's right. All right, let's talk football again. Don't look now, but the Cowboys team that many thought was going to be on the outside looking in a few weeks ago, well, they now sit atop their division. The NFC East is theirs to win as Washington keeps losing quarterbacks, and the Eagles stretch out their Super Bowl hangover to a full season. Dallas has won their last four games, including a big win over the Saints on Thursday Night Football. Jerry Jones was asked if that win changes the way he looks at this team. Take a listen.
Yes. And the main reason is not that all of a sudden you're aware of these players' abilities. It is that the players themselves will be different once they have tasted and have just made themselves aware that this extraordinary level of play or expectations of play can be obtained. And that happens. That's real.
So you see, what do you think about what Jerry Jones said? You buying that this is a different Cowboys team after they beat the Saints?
Well, I wouldn't say just after the Saints. They had been building, trending in the right way. I try to tell you guys, every year, there's going to be teams, November and December, they're going to catch a vision. They're going to get it together, playing with backups or whatever. They're going to be out of the excuse business, and they're going to be progressively getting better to try to get into the tournament. Into the tournament. That's the thing that's different about the NFL than all the other leagues is all you need to do is be able to get in. Yes, you'd like to be a one or two seed, but all you need to do is be able to get in. We have seen teams just barely getting into the playoffs, creating that momentum at the end of the season. Now it becomes, can they duplicate what they have done? Even on the road, they've got a couple wins on the road. Now they've been able to back it up by playing good football on Thanksgiving and last week against the Saints. This is a good football team, all right? But they're only good when they play the game on their terms. Dominate time possession. They need 32 to 34 minutes. That's what they had on that Thursday night game against the Saints. They need to limit their quarterback throws under 30. And what we're seeing is they still are starting to get the explosive plays on the outside. When I watch Dallas, when I watch the coaches' tape, when I look at it, the defenses are still guarding them almost the same way. But now they're making people pay for it. Michael Gallup on the outside, making some big plays. Amari Cooper making people miss on the shorter passes and turning those into big games. It puts fear in NFL defenses. So now they're to the time where defenses, do I change? Now do I have 6 or 7 in the box compared to 7 and 8? And Dallas has to be able to force teams into a very, very similar style for which they won that game against the Saints at 13-10. But alarm, I'm concerned. They played a great game and only scored 13 points.
Well, I said before that game, if the Cowboys win this game, I will start taking them more seriously. Not more seriously. I wasn't taking them seriously.
Bigger than just a division winner who are probably going to get bounced
exactly
out of the
playoffs. Exactly right. The only reason the Cowboys prior to that game were relevant in my eyes were because they're the Cowboys, the most popular team in the league, and they're in the worst division. And so they were going to be in the playoff picture. You win your division, you get a home game, who knows what happens.
Yep.
But when you hold the Saints to 10 points, that's remarkable. When you hold the Saints to 23 minutes time of possession, see? Cowboys held the ball for 176 yards for the Saints. Like, these are halves for them. And so that makes, for in my eyes, that makes you have to take the Cowboys more seriously. But the flip side to it is we can talk about, and I think you're right because I've seen it over the last month, what Amari has done, how it's helped Zeke. The offense still was wholly ineffective in that football game. It was effective at keeping the football but not turning that possession into points. In order for that to be sustainable, obviously the offense has to tick up a level, and they can give it all away with a loss this weekend to Philly. If you were to tell me, if you're Jerry Jones, whether he would admit it or not, you're going to go 1-1 against New Orleans and Philly.
They'd take the Eagles.
They would absolutely have the win be against Philly. Now, they beat Philly this week. They basically wrapped the division with 3 weeks to play, and then you can even take them more seriously.
And, CeCe, you brought up something that was pretty interesting. Before the Saints game, Jerry Jones came out and said, we need to treat this every single play like it's the Super Bowl. High energy, high intensity, high everything when we go out there. Well, that's hard to do over the course of the next couple games to finish out the regular season. They did it during that Saints game, but there's no telling they could maintain that level throughout.
It's hard to do it for a month. I believe they'll be able to do it this Sunday, but it's hard to play at that level. Now, they are a young football team. They should be able to duplicate that type of energy. That's the way that great defenses play. Baltimore played that way. Tampa Bay played that way. Teams that were dominated by their defense and led them to Super Bowls, Dallas has to try to be able to duplicate that. And with a young roster, it's easier to do because they're younger.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, are the Lakers too reliant on LeBron? LeBron is even sure. We have a very tall person to come in and talk about it. His name is Richard Jefferson. He's here to weigh in next.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back to First Things First. NBA champ Richard Jefferson joins our fun
RJ.
Little healthy, lovely family.
That's what you used to have to do to LeBron when he wasn't doing great. He's like, hey, Bron King, you're doing great. You see what I do here? You see that? That's why they brought me here, the veteran.
You
the
are
leadership.
A veteran.
You
why
see
you
that?
Squeeze my man's hand like that?
He wants to see if I was going to squeeze it back.
I was shake. There's a That's lack it. Of circulation.
The tattoo told me stop.
LeBron James and the Lakers have won 10 of the last 13 games, but LeBron is doing a lot of the work on his own. And former Lakers greats Magic Johnson and Kobe Bryant have said the team might be overusing the King. LeBron was asked about this, and here's what he had to say.
I don't know what asking me to do too much is, to be honest. I just play my game. I understand the logic behind it. I understand, you know, what Magic and Kobe are saying because we want to continue to grow the young guys. You know, we want to see how, you know, how much our young guys can grow and be the best, you know, they can be. I mean, Magic and Kobe know who I am. I know who I am. They know what they're going to get out of me. That is, you know what you're going to get out of me every game. Am I going to play well every game? Am I going to shoot the ball well? No, but you know who I am. And when it's time to, when it's really, really, really money time, you know who is going to be there. So, you know, we got guys that just want to continue to develop and guys that continue to, you know, get better and better just from experience. They haven't had a lot of experience. So I think that's, people are trying to blow it out of proportion. Like, okay, why do you have LeBron if you don't want to use them? Unless guys are just, they don't understand the logic behind it. But it doesn't matter. Like, you guys asked me the other day, like, do you feel better after playing 30 minutes compared to if you played 40 minutes? It's like, no. I work myself all year round to get in tip-top shape all year round. I don't stop. So I can do whatever. I mean, I played a game seven in the finals, and I damn near played every minute of it. Last year, I played every single game. Every single game. So, you know, you kind of slice it how you want it, but I understand what Magic and Kobe saying, and we have to continue to develop these guys, because if we don't, then long-term, what does that do for our franchise?
All right, RJ, I'm sure you also understand where Magic and Kobe were coming from, but not at all. Okay, no. Thanks for joining us. No. We're going to take a quick break. And then, but you played with LeBron, and you know where he is and how he prepares himself and how he understands what the duration of the season is going to, the toll that takes on his body. What do you think about what LeBron had to say?
Well, I don't really worry about what LeBron had to say. It's more Kobe and Magic. It's like, look at this. I feel like they contradict themselves, more Magic than Kobe. They've been doing it all season. We got to be patient. Oh, they're not winning enough. Oh, we knew it was going to take this amount of time. Mm-hmm. Look, LeBron James is playing a career low in minutes. And the last time I looked up, the Lakers are in fifth place. This is with an injury to Rondo, suspension to Rondo, suspension to Brandon Ingram, right? Mm. Getting Tyson Chandler just recently, not really having a backup center. You had LeBron James playing 31 minutes. He scored 28 points, and they won. And now, a week later or a couple days later, you want to say, I feel like we're using him too much. It's like, wait, which one is it? I can't figure this out. And if I can't figure this out as a person that does this for a living, what message is that sending to the fans or to the rest of the media?
So why do you think Kobe and Magic going out saying it? I have an idea why Kobe's saying it. I think Kobe, in his defense, was just answering a question. He was at an event. But I also think Kobe is very attached to the Lakers, and he doesn't have a responsibility the way Magic does. Magic's running the team. His job is to put them in the best position to win a championship. Why do you think Magic's saying it?
I just think they're still searching. I think this is still, they're still trying to figure out what is the best way to run this team, right? I think that's the best way for them to figure this out. And sometimes it's done very visibly in the Laker organization. And that's kind of unfortunate for the team and the young guys. But every time that LeBron James is not in that game, and even in that Dallas game, they were down 13 in the first quarter, right? They were down 13 in the first quarter. So that would have been an excuse to play Bron, because we got to win this game. Let's play Bron 38. But Luke Walton stuck to his guns and said, hey, every time you come out of the game, our young guys get an opportunity to play and learn. And from Kobe Bryant's standpoint, if you go back and look at when he tore his Achilles, the 10 games prior to that, he was averaging 46 minutes a night, right? So there's a cumulative effect. For LeBron, if he's playing 31 minutes tonight and over the end of the season, that's when he will see the benefits, not in like a 2 or 3 game stretch.
And he understands that. He fully understands that and is okay with that, seemingly.
And that's the thing. He's okay with that.
Yeah.
The Lakers are winning. The young guys are getting experience. And Bron's playing 31 minutes after leading the league in minutes last season. What else does Magic and Kobe want?
So, Kobe's comments, I think, were less about minutes and more about how the game is running, particularly at the end of the game, where everything's running through LeBron.
Yes.
Where the younger guys are not getting what Kobe would consider like the clutch experience. And so let me ask you, as a guy, obviously you were in different phases of your career when you played with LeBron, but you saw how Kyrie reacted. You saw how some of the younger guys adjusted. Do you think there's anything to a stunting effect of playing with LeBron, where you know everything late in games, big moments, going to run through him? And could that have, it seemed like Kobe was alluding, could have a negative effect on the progression of Ingram, the progression of Ball. Do you buy into that?
Well, it didn't have a negative effect on Tristan Thompson. It didn't have a negative effect on Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving takes the last second shot in a game seven situation, right? Like, this is an individual that will allow you to grow. If you put in the work, if you put in the time, like, this individual will put you in a position to be successful. Brandon Ingram and the rest of these these guys have had opportunities, and they're going to continue to get opportunities. I live in Los Angeles, so I get to watch a ton of the Laker games, and they're taking big shots in the last 2 or 3 minutes. But everything should run through your best player. Everything should run through James Harden in the last 5 minutes of the game. You're not worried about the growth and
competitiveness
of James Ennis or Clint Capella. No, it's like, yo, our best player in the last 5-6 minutes of the game, we're going to put the ball in his hands.
One thing I disagree with Kobe about is those clutch moments, you earn those with your teammates. You're not granted those. I don't care if you're the first pick. I don't care if you're not drafted at all. Man, when you're in a game, you're in a team sport, you earn that, all right? You earn it from the coaches and you earn it from your teammates. That's the reason why I can sacrifice, because a guy earned it. I can sacrifice. I can set a good pick. I can be a shadow. I can be a decoy to try to get someone open. That's how you win games. That's how you keep chemistry. When you just appoint people that they're going to be, you're going to shoot this shot because you were drafted. No. You can't operate within a team sport that way. Because you know what? Guys will have resentment. And you know something? When they come over to set that double screen, it will not have no girth on it. They'll let a guy slide by.
Would we be even having this conversation if a Kuzma or Alonzo or Ingram, if any of them could step up as a viable second option to LeBron?
Well, and it's going to take time. But understand, those 17 minutes that LeBron James was not on the floor in the most recent Dallas game, those are 17 minutes for those guys to prove that they can get moments, that they can prove that they can knock down shots, to extend the lead, to get a rhythm. So then all of a sudden, if we're in the last 3 minutes of the game and Bron just swings it over to Ingram, Ingram's got 22 points. Kuzma has 19 points and is 5-for-7 from three. Here, go do your thing. You've seen it. You've done it. I just think that they do too much, and they need to allow Luke Walton and his coaching staff to continue doing what everyone has seen as a very good job.
Well, and we saw in the second-to-last game they lost, the game against Orlando, which was a terrible loss. Terrible. They were dominating them in the first quarter. It seemed like it was going to be one of those scheduled Laker wins they get with the Sunday afternoon 12:30 tip. Team gets in, parties the night before in L.A. And then Orlando in the second, third, and fourth quarter took control of that game. The Lakers make a push late. They tie it at 104-104 with a minute left. LeBron drives to the bucket and finds, I believe it was Josh Hart, for an open three. And he just missed it. Orlando goes down and wins. LeBron is not Kobe in this regard either. He is looking to pass. He is looking to find in, not to bring up a raw moment, but the finals that you got, the last finals you were on the team for. The biggest play of the season, Cavs up 2. 40 seconds left. Chris and I are sitting there. LeBron drives, finds Kyle Korver in the corner for the most efficient shot in the NBA all season. Was that corner three? Kyle just missed it. And that ends, I think that could have been a series, even with Durant. Like, I know you believe this, so too, right?
Yes.
And so, like, he is a guy, he does not have the mentality of, because I'm the best player, I always have to take the last shot. That was Kobe's mentality. That wasn't even necessarily Jordan's mentality. We know Jordan, if need be, would find somebody. So I don't even see the stunting effect there, because LeBron's a pass-first guy.
Yeah. No, it's really not there. And I don't want to take too much, because we all hang on Kobe's words because he is Kobe. But we've seen kind of this consistent meddling with Magic Johnson, with the – and it's like, look, everything that you wanted. Luke, the two best free agents that the Lakers have gotten in the last 5 years are Luke Walton and LeBron James. Those are the two best free agents that they have signed, because Luke Walton was with the Warriors. He won 25 straight games, helped them, you know, and
so
helped
them. So obviously you think Luke is the coach for the Lakers with LeBron moving forward.
Yes, I believe, I 100% believe so, because understand this, if you fired Luke or if you decide to make a change, now everyone's looking at Magic Johnson like, okay, well, if you don't bring in the next guy right, then all of a sudden we let go a guy that's played for the Lakers for 10 years, won championships, has a basketball legacy with his dad and growing up around the Celtics. Who are you going to bring in? Because they don't grow on trees, and they would only get one mistake after letting go of Luke.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.